Hello, lovely people. It's Flo here. Unfortunately, I've made a big mistake. It's 10 past 10 p.m. on Wednesday evening. I wouldn't say it's my mistake, but some sort of gremlin has infiltrated my lovely new microphone that I bought. And sadly, the first 5 minutes of the podcast are completely ruined as a result. I tried to redub over it and then I realised it was completely unrealistic and boring. Then I tried to fix it in different ways. Then I tried to see if Theo could re-record it, and because of storms in New Orleans, he lost all his power and I can't even get hold of him. So enjoy what's left of the podcast, about 35 minutes. I will tell you that all you missed was a bit of pre-chat, a bit of discussion on the home nations and the Euros, so apologies that you'll come into that halfway through a discussion about Wales, but you can probably guess what we chatted about in terms of the rest of the home nations, and we will be back next week, and I promise I will not make the same mistake. So thanks for listening, and sorry about the rubbish podcast. So it seems like Northern Ireland are going to pit Wales to that playoff spot, which is fantastic for Northern Ireland. But on paper, you would have put Wales on to get that. And then looking up north to Scotland, disappointing for them as well. They lost to Finland last night, which was less than ideal. They're in third, a point behind Portugal. And they're still technically in the hunt, but it is looking tricky for them as well, off the back of a really good World Cup where they just missed out on qualifying. I mean, for the...
That was probably my most heartbreaking moment of 2019, if you're going to talk about Scotland in the World Cup.
It was brutal. It was brutal.
Absolutely brutal. Aaron Cuthbert at the final whistle. Oof.
Yeah. And another really exciting squad of players who you want to see at Euros. And I hope that they can, the results go their way and they can pull it out. But there's also a bit of weirdness, I guess, with how things happen with the squad after the World Cup, and Shelley Kerr having to apologise after her and some coaches had too many drinks after the World Cup. And I think those wounds have healed, but perhaps, I don't know, there's still some things left over from that. But it would be disappointing if after qualifying for the World Cup and all the hype around that and the decent job they did there, if they didn't make it. And then finally, Ireland, more heartbreak. They've played seven. Yeah, they've played seven and they're in second, but only by a point. They lost a crucial game to Ukraine on Friday. And worst of all, they've got to play Germany. And I'm pretty sure they never beaten Germany in their history, but I couldn't find definitive answers on that when I went to have a look. They've already lost to Germany 3-0 in this qualification period. And Ukraine, who are trying to chase them, they're playing Montenegro. So in reality, I think Ireland are out of it as well. But you never know. You never know. So I guess the issue is a lot of the home nations are relying on favours from elsewhere, which is always really difficult. But you never know. We might see a bit of drama and a bit of excitement. But those games won't be happening until November, December. So we've got to wait a little bit for that.
Germany qualified last week alongside Holland. Lots of fun in the dressing room after the Dutch made it through to Euro 2022. Sweden, Denmark and Norway then join them this week as well. Do you think Germany, now having qualified for the tournament in just under 2 years' time, do you think that would give Ireland a chance to cause an upset if they got nothing to, you know, quote unquote, nothing to play for?
I don't think so. I even think Germany putting out not their best team is still better than what Ireland can give them, unfortunately. I think they'll still want to beat them and put up a good fight. But maybe that's something to hope for, is that their eyes won't really be on that. They won't be that focused, and maybe it'll just be a bit of a friendly for them.
I hope Denise O'Sullivan has a good response for you after you just ruled out Republic of Ireland. France battered, I think it was Macedonia, 11-0 in their first game, but then were held 0-0 to Austria, which was a result that kind of caught my eye from the internationals this week. It seemed like a really good point for Austria, who are currently sitting in the top three runners-up, I think, alongside Italy and Belgium. So those are the three teams currently the top, the best runners up who will make it to the tournament. So that was a really hard earned point for Austria. Any other internationals caught your eye, Flo?
I think that's it, really. I don't know if you have anything to report from the US camp and any updates and the training games or whatever they were doing there.
So we didn't get a broadcasted intra-team contest like we did with the Lionesses, but we did get lots of fun content. I'm sure you saw the kind of Becky Sauerbrunn reality TV kind of ball get hungry, hungry hippo gate, you could call it. I'm sure you saw that.
That was good.
It was a lot of fun. And I think the US women's national team, obviously with the way COVID's been held over here, and in general, the US women's are so dominant on this continent that I don't think you get as much competitive gameplay in as much locally, and by locally, I mean in North America, as you would say with European teams who can play each other. So the team, it feels like they've been starved of competition. So it's cool to see these 27 players get together in Colorado. And I think it's good for morale. I also think you forget, or you don't forget, it's been highly publicized, but some of the biggest names, your Heaths, your Press, your Rapinos, aren't there. And so you're seeing players like Becky Sauerbrunn and Midge Purse to some extent. And I know Becky's been around the team for, you know, 10, 15 years at this point. But you're seeing some of these players step into the spotlight. And I think that's something, reading people's tweets and kind of getting the taking the temperature of the US national team at the moment. I think it's cool to see some of these players coming across as leaders and stars of a new wave, a new chapter. I wrote a slightly fantasy-esque piece for Dynamo Theory about Shay Groom following in the footsteps of Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan as delivering kind of a legendary header in red, white, and blue. So I think people are getting excited about these new players, Lynn Williams, Midge Purse, etc. And I think it was a good camp for the US, but nothing concrete to report. The other big news from the international game is Bev Priestman taking up the role as manager of Canada. That was cool to see.
Yeah, I actually also want to just go back quickly, disappointment that the Lionesses' second training game they've done wasn't streamed. Actually, it sounded like it was a really boring, terrible game. A 1-0 win, I think, for the white team. So probably not the end of the world that we didn't get to watch it, but I did enjoy another classic JPH tweet. Jesse was hilarious. They said, I'll find the link, but they said, "It seems like Phil Neville's just trying to prove that he's doing coachy things. What's the point in holding these behind closed doors games when no one can see what's happening?" And actually, it just hit the nail on the head, because there's not really any point in even having media there, because there's no one watching it. So there's no way to measure it up against anything. And it does feel like a bit of a performance from Neville to say, "Oh, look, I am still coaching. I'm still good at my job. We're still trying over here. Hey, look at me." Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. But yes, Bev Priestman is taking up a coaching spot that's been vacant for a while now. A slightly controversial spot because her sort of official predecessor, John Herdman, who'd done a really good job with Canada, got them really high up in the world rankings, was manager at their home World Cup, had done a really good job. He left in 2018, so that's kind of a while ago. But they hadn't found a permanent replacement. His assistant had stepped in and taken control for the World Cup. But what was very controversial about the way Herdman left is he was named manager of Canada's men's team. And it was very controversial because a few people say that he took the job, or the Canada Federation persuaded him to take the job because they thought he was going to get the England job before Neville got it. So it was a way to sort of dangle the carrot and make him stay, is, "Oh, we'll give you the men's job." That's what some people said. And it didn't go down well with the squad either. Christine Sinclair tweeted at the time that she was shocked and surprised. She tweeted saying she was speechless right now, and lots of other players were disappointed. So that was 2018.
I would have just gone with the one single snake emoji. That would have been my, if I was on the Canada team, just one snake emoji, turn your phone off, go for a walk.
Yeah, 100%. That's a good call. So yeah, a bit of an interesting job and a big step up for her. What's also really interesting is that I was looking through my emails at old press releases because I was thinking, was there a subtle indication that she was going to take the job? Because only a month ago in September 9th, press release comes through announcing that Priestman was stepping down as assistant of the Lionesses and becoming head coach of England under-18s. So in that press release, her quote says she wants to take the step up to a head coaching role and this is part of the journey for her. So it's hard to tell whether, I don't know how long the notice period is with the FA, if it's a 4-week notice period, but you'd have to think she was doing some Zoom interview processes during that time. But I mean, she can do what she likes. It's up to you what you do with your jobs. But it's just interesting how they've worked that. And now England have a new assistant in the role who actually did an interview during camp. So you can get to know, I think her name is Rahan Skinner. I hope I've pronounced her first name right. So she's the new assistant with Neville. And I imagine Serena Wiegman will bring in her own assistant. But yeah, an interesting one. And I hope Bev does really well. I call her Bev like I know her personally. Never met the woman, but seems really nice. I follow her on Twitter. And I think that's a role, you know, Canada have success at the World Cup. They won bronze medals, got a very good squad. And I think people would really like them to push on because they had a disappointing World Cup in 2019 by all things. And I've spoken to people, Canadians, who really want a domestic league, a proper domestic league, because obviously most players just go and play abroad, US or Europe. So hopefully this is the sign of some long-term plans. I hope so anyway.
Canada will be at the Olympics next summer. So it'll be interesting to see Bev. Should Canada end up playing Great Britain, you might see some insider knowledge.
Yeah, if also it might, if Neville, much to his wish, gets the
not
Olympic
happening.
Job, which not I hope he doesn't, but he claims he still can do it. That would also be really funny.
Yeah, I also, to be honest, if we ended up playing Canada, I would probably be waiting for Bev Priestman to get the one up on Neville. Should Neville be the manager?
Same.
Just quickly on this idea of Canada having lots of potential, not fulfilling it. How would you compare Canada to either another home nation or another sort of rival? You know, it's not easy being so close to the United States, such a force in the game, and then being the sort of little sibling as a sibling. Who would you compare Canada to? You know, what is their potential and what is their relationship like to the United States? Or do you think it's similar to the relationship between Scotland and England, or do you think it's different?
I think there is always a bit of rivalry in sport between Canadians and Americans. I don't think we see it so much in football, but I mean, ice hockey and other sports, you see it a lot. But I feel like, obviously I don't really know because I don't live in North America, but I don't sense it so much in football. And obviously, a lot of them would have played together at college or at club teams. So I feel like the rivalry isn't as strong either because they often will play together to be successful and be at the top of their game. So I feel like there's much more rivalry with the home nations here because it's inbuilt in our culture within football. And it's so much a part of that, the way that also a lot of those players would have been brought up, whether it's through their families' ties or through watching games, you know, at club level or international, they would have felt that rivalry. I don't know. You're obviously in North America, so maybe you can sense it a bit more, but I actually don't know. Obviously, I mentioned Canada have won bronzes at the Olympic Games. I don't know if there might be some classic games that I'm not aware of between the US and Canada where there's been proper dust-ups at the Olympic Games. My Olympic women's football knowledge, like before 2012, is not the best, I have to be honest.
Canadians, please get in touch. I don't spend enough time with Canadians, but my gut feeling, not with you, Flo, but maybe with other siblings we have, is that Canada is like the younger sibling that really is, I wouldn't say envious, but is really trying to keep up with the older sibling, but the US, Canada's not even on their radar. Like, in my head, it's a real one-sided rivalry. A little bit like England-Scotland, you could say. But maybe I've just offended a lot of Scottish listeners. I love you, Scotland. You're a much better version of England. Staying in North America, the NWSL announced their expansion draft rules this week. Did you see this, Flo? It's been another big week in the NWSL. Lots of new rules and a big, big, big trade between two teams.
Yeah, this is another one. I mean, we talk about North American sports and their culture. This whole situation baffles me. And I think if it ever came over to the UK, people would go mad. I mean, we see it a bit, I guess, with United and when they relaunched their women's team and they got massive players. But yeah, maybe for those that don't understand it, give them a little detour.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison, actually, thinking about United in 2018. But yeah, for those that don't know, the NWSL will be expanding to 10 teams in 2021. Rathing, Louisville, if you want
to
go.
Is it meant to have a little Spanish
twang? I'm not sure if it's meant to have the flair, but, you know, I'm going to say Racing because I think that's how people from Kentucky say it. But Racing Louisville will be joining the league in 2021. And so basically, there is a draft, not unlike the collegiate draft in American sports, where they had, like, they divvy out the best players based on a position draft system. But this time, you're basically taking players from other teams. And so you get up to two players from each team, and you basically just go around the teams and you just steal a player. But obviously, there are some rules to this. If you have US women's national team players, you are allowed to protect maximum of two of them. So, you know, for example, you know, the Portland Thorns have five US women's national team players. They can only hang on to two of them they can only protect two of them. And then Louisville will have their choice of the other three. But Louisville is only allowed to select a maximum of two women's national team players from the other nine NWSL clubs, and then they have to pick non-national team players. Each team is allowed to protect 11 total players, two of which in that 11 can be national team players. You still with me, Flo?
Yeah, just about. but also, spoiler, we are going to do a proper deep dive draft episode, which will probably
be down for you.
You know, the cheat sheet for the draft system, how it works, why it exists, why it's important. And I think it does make sense because otherwise it's going to be so unfair for a new team to ever get going because they're going to be constantly, you know, it will take 10 years to even get anything up and running or to get some kind of decent squad together. So it does make sense in the fight for fairness, which with the draft system, and without relegation and promotion in US sports is such a big part of it. So I do get it. It just does get a little bit confusing. And this, the idea that someone can just steal your players, it just seems wild to me.
Well, and it all sort of kicked off this week because Louisville acquired Yuki Nagasoto and Savannah McCaskill, who are two of Chicago's better players, especially in the midfield. And they also acquired Chicago's first round pick. And this was in exchange for protection in the draft next week. So Louisville can no longer select any players from Chicago. And Chicago have handed them Yuki Nagasoto and Savannah McCaskill. And these are pretty well-regarded players, and it's a big coup for Louisville. But what Chicago got to do in exchange for them was basically they were able to control their destiny and give the players they wanted to give to Louisville. Yuki Nagasoto, I suppose, is a little bit older. I think she's a little bit more expensive. Chicago Red Stars do not have an MLS brother club, so they are a little bit more strapped for cash than some of the others. So a high profile player like Nagasoto can kind of go over there. And the Red Stars have also acquired a lot of women's national team players. So they've managed to hold on to all their national team players in exchange for two of their more high profile non-national team players. But yeah, like Flo said, we will be covering the expansion draft, which happens in 2 weeks. And we'll keep you up to date on all the manic craziness that goes on over there, which will be particularly cloudy because there are lots of national team players currently playing abroad. So would Louisville dare to say draft Alex Morgan, knowing that she might not play? Is that a waste of a draft pick? We'll keep you updated. Flo, I just wanted to quickly kind of spin it over, like you were saying, these the kind of weirdness of American rules. What do you think an expansion draft would look like in the WSL? Let's say the example I want to use was Aston Villa, who just got promoted. If Aston Villa could steal players from other teams, and let's say you can only protect two Lionesses, who do you think they'd go for? City obviously have an absolute slew of Lionesses. So what two Lionesses do you think City would protect, and who do you think Aston Villa would be interested in? You obviously got Chelsea have Beth England, Fran Kirby, Millie Bright and Neve Charles, so they only get to protect two of those. And Arsenal have Leo Williamson, Jordan Nobbs and Beth Mead. So yeah, who do you think Villa would try and draft in a hypothetical WSL expansion draft?
I like your style. I'm going to say, well, City, Steph Horton, because she's captain. I think they would want to keep hold of her. I think they would, just because of loyalty. But personally, I wouldn't. If I was... mixed signals. So I'm saying my head says... Well, my heart says that's what they'll do, but my head says they shouldn't do that. But that's what they'd probably do. And Lucy Bronze, I'd say, because Jill Scott's already transitioning into a coaching role. But at the same time, then they haven't got any young talent in there. So my head would say Lucy Bronze and Chloe Kelly, new investment.
Yeah, I wouldn't like
But Chloe my Kelly heart, my heart says Steph Horton, Lucy Bronze, but that's a bit short term. So that's what I'll go. And then do you want me to pick some from Chelsea and Arsenal as well?
Yeah, Chelsea and Arsenal as well, I think. United have four England players as well. So I don't know, whatever you... Who do you think Gemma Davies would be interested in?
I reckon Chelsea would be willing to let Beth England go in the current situation.
That's the interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, I think, and Kerr.
Yeah, I think given Fran Kirby's form right now and the way Emma Hayes is talking about her, how she's such a fan favourite, people have been waiting so long for her to get back to this form and she's playing so well, I think Chelsea would want to keep hold of Fran. But I think Beth England could go.
Which I think would be Gemma Davies' first pick in the expansion draft. I think she would nab Beth England right at the top.
Do they normally always take the two US women that they're entitled to, or do they sometimes only take one?
Well, that's usually they always take two. The rules have slightly changed this year because the league announced that Louisville will actually get $75,000 per player if they don't take a national team player, and that's 75,000.
And that's on salaries for a player, or
essentially, yeah, salary.
One player, yeah. A $75,000 salary for one player,
or any way you could divvy it up. But right, the league is essentially giving Louisville extra money should they not take any national team players. So, for example, someone like Yuki Nagasoto is a high-profile international player. You know, you can put money on her. Rachel Daly gets allocation money from the Houston Dash to kind of put it in comparison.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
So who else would Villa would steal? If they get Beth England off Chelsea, do you think they'd take, you know, Beth Mead from Arsenal? I think would probably be available.
I think they might take Leah Williamson. I think that's a good choice, thinking about
Arsenal,
the future.
I think Arsenal would protect Leah.
Oh, no, they would. No,
Leah and Nobbs would be off the table.
Yeah, okay, Beth Mead, I'll see you go. See you later, Beth.
Beth and Beth to Aston Villa. There you go. It just happened. We're expanding.
Job done. Deal done.
All right, we're going to take a quick break while you digest Aston Villa's expansion into the WSL. And then we're going to come back with a long-awaited preview of the 2019-2020 FA Cup final. All right, we'll see you in a bit. Welcome back. And this is Relatively Football. And we're just going to be taking you through the FA Cup final, which is going to be happening this Sunday afternoon in the UK at London Wembley, 2:30 p.m. in London, 9:30 a.m. on the East Coast, and 1:30 a.m. Monday out far east in Australia, around midnight in Japan. Flo, Everton, inches from a first trophy in a long old time. do you feel like the pressure is on them because they might not get to another final this year? Or do you feel like, as probably the underdog, City will kind of psych themselves out? Like we've seen in some of these bigger games, City have struggled. Do you think Everton will feel the pressure, or do you think they'll come in kind of knowing that they can play free and just be themselves?
I think that the second one, I think they'll be feeling very free and know that there's no pressure on them. And also, I don't think this is going to be the last final they'll reach of the season. So this could be the first step on a really successful season for them. And none of the squad that have been to finals with Everton and lost, or even really, I think, any of the personnel from 13-14 are there. So there's not like some hangover and turmoil that we sometimes see with, I guess, more dynasty teams where, you know, they've been burnt before and all they want to do is win the cup after losing it. They don't have any of that pressure. That it's a pretty patched together team of some new players who've joined this season and then some younger, more exciting ones who maybe have come up from the academy and stuff. So I think it's really exciting. I think the pressure is off, and I hope that they really go for it and they take it to City. I haven't quite seen if there's any injury hangovers from the international break. Obviously, those that went away with England, nothing really happened apart from Alicia Russo dropping out. So fingers crossed, Valerie Govan, as far as I'm aware, she didn't get injured. Hopefully Izzy Christensen was fine on her camp. Sorensen, was she away with Denmark? I presume she was. Hopefully she comes back in one piece. So I'm just hoping, because City are so Lionesses heavy and the Lionesses are pretty well rested, be interesting to see how that plays. Will it play in their favour, or will actually Everton be in better form because they've had more, you know, more match play in the last 2 weeks?
City are currently the holders, having won the 2018-19 FA Cup. But they also won it in 2017 with Izzy Christensen in the midfield, who obviously played with Lucy Bronze, who's now back in Manchester, on that team. Do you think Christensen's knowledge of City and Steph Houghton, Jill Scott, Lucy Bronze, all from that team, do you think that will help her kind of steady some of the less experienced players around her, or at least less experienced in England? You know, having that FA Cup experience, and that'll help out Everton try and get them over the edge?
Yeah, I think it definitely will. I mean, as someone who's been around for a while now, she's definitely one of the senior players in the squad and will have lots of little bits of analysis and lots of bits of insight she can bring to the team. So yeah, I'm sure it will. And she's having such a good season that the form will, you know, will carry on, which I think is why it's great.
Everton dropped points last time out against Brighton. They weren't as ruthless in front of goal as we have seen at times this year. City, similarly against Reading, wasted an absolute whole host of chances. Do you think we're going to see a lot of goals? Do you think this game's going to be quite tight? How do you see the flow of the game going?
Yeah, I think the game against Reading was a real eye-opener because you can see how City get frustrated when they don't make the most of opportunities, and they get very frustrated quite quickly. And I can imagine they do a lot of clock watching, and it's easy for them to forget kind of what they do best and the sort of fundamentals because they start overthinking everything. So that would be my biggest worry, is coming off the back of that disappointing result, now having dropped points in three games, that sort of feeling that the title is slipping away from them pretty quickly, and Gareth Taylor already having to answer questions about is the title race over and things like that. There's a little bit of doubt creeping in. So winning this trophy would be really good to tackle some of that, and also would be great for Mewis, Lavelle, Bronze as well to kind of get up and running this season. I think it would give them a lot of confidence because we haven't seen Lucy Bronze at her best yet, I think, especially against Reading. I think she didn't have a great game, and I think she's carrying a lot of responsibility on her shoulders, 28 years old now, obviously, being in the England setup and played in in the WSL for a very long time. So I think there's a lot of expectation as well, having gone and won all those Champions Leagues. There's a lot of expectation on her to come and be an outstanding player and deliver and prove why she's, you know, runner-up in the Ballon d'Or. So I feel like there's a lot of pressure on her shoulders. So it'd be great for her to win a trophy and I guess get that, not monkey off her back, because I don't think people are really talking about it like they are talking about, say, Raheem Sterling and City's decline this season. But I still think she wants to prove a point, and it would be great for them to get up and running very quickly.
Yeah, I think that's where my loyalty becomes a bit split down the middle. I really like the idea of Bronze just bossing this game. And I think she's obviously so capable of doing that. And I think seeing her back at Wembley playing in English domestic football, I think is a genuinely exciting moment for the WSL and English football fans everywhere. And I think I'm excited to relish that moment of watching her kind of back in a final, and the idea of her getting, adding to her trophy cabinet and kind of building on being one of the leaders of European football, I think is so important. On the flip side, I am very interested to see if Everton, who can have kind of upset the apple cart in the first stages of the league this year, you know, they have 5 more points than City, as you alluded to. Can they really annoy City by getting the first trophy, like you said, making all these flashy Lavelle, Mewis, Bronze transfers look, you know, build the pressure, make them look a bit nervous, make them unsure about everything that's going on. I'm really interested to see how Sorensen, Rasso and Emsley, that, you know, real lots of width in that attacking midfield, how they put pressure on Demi Stokes and Bronze at fullback. Who do you think will start? Gemma Bonner, obviously not away with the Lionesses. Do you think Gemma Bonner will start at centre-back, or do you think we're going to be seeing Greenwood again?
I don't know. I'm not a massive fan of the experiment, which I said before on the podcast, which I didn't know, but it was the second time they'd done it.
And the last time they did it, Man City beat Everton.
It's true.
Yeah. Man City have already beat Everton once this year, 3-1 in the Country
Cup. You're not wrong. But I think your best 11 is playing someone who has played at centre-back for a very long time, is very experienced and very good. I think don't mess around with that. I would like to see Gemma Bonner. Justice for Gemma, as always.
As always. Ellen White is another player to watch narrative-wise. She was on the losing team in 2017 to Man City, playing for Birmingham City. And she does have a couple of FA Cups in her trophy cabinet from her time with Arsenal nearly a decade ago. And I think she will be very, very looking forward to the idea of getting back into winning ways in domestic football. Anything else you're excited about in this game? Any other players you think we should look out for? Like you said, Mewis and Lavelle, I think they never played at Wembley. That'll be exciting. Maybe Jess
Park. We talked a little bit before about like what's it like for Americans playing at Wembley. And it is a massive shame that there aren't fans, as always, with sport and football at the moment. But the FA Cup at Wembley is such a great event every year and has had record attendances year on year and is a really great occasion and celebration for women's football. So it is such a shame that there won't be fans. But hopefully come the 2020-21 final around May time, we will be able to get fans in and they'll be able to beat yet another record, because it is amazing to have that many people watching women's football in such an iconic ground. Just hope for a good game. I know it's on BT Sport because I've seen the adverts, but
BBC as well.
It's
on BBC, sure. NFA player, everyone else out there.
Great.
Watchable.
I was thinking it would be free to air, but because I'd only seen the adverts on BT Sport, I was freaking out. But
And we must mention London native going back to playing at Wembley. Chloe Kelly will be playing at Wembley, obviously now a very much part of the Lionesses. It's also a revenge game because this is only the second time she's played against Everton after leaving them, and she scored in the Conti Cup. Do you think she'll have anything to say to some of her
revenge
former teammates? Or anything to say to Willie Kirk as she scores a screamer and runs off with the trophy?
No love lost there. I think it was a natural progression for her to move to a bigger club. But perhaps it will be a nice, you know, oh, you know, you think you're bigger than us, but I don't think so. I feel like they're all still good friends, and yeah, there's no hard feelings on that one. But if you want to start that narrative, you know, go for it, mate.
I'm only here for the narratives. All right, let's just get a prediction for you, and then from you, and then we'll get out of here.
Oh, this is a tough one. Very, very tough. Before I give my prediction as well, shout out if you want to come and watch the women's football on Sunday. Dulwich Hamlet women are playing at Dulwich Hamlet Stadium. And I think there's going to be refreshments. I'm presuming there's going to be refreshments. But anyway, that kicks off at 2:00. I'm going to be watching the Women's FA Cup on my phone during the game. You can come watch it on my phone, but please stay 2 meters away and wear a mask while you do that. But prediction for the FA Cup. And it's
football,
live.
And it's live.
But yeah, the first women's football match. Actually, no, not the first women's football match. That's a lie. Delete that from the transcript. Anyway, my prediction is going to be 2-1 City.
I'm nervous.
City's second time playing at Wembley as well in the space of like 2 months.
Didn't go too well the first time. I am going to say 1-0 to the Toffees. Valerie Govin header, and Izzy Christensen will boss Kira Walsh and upset that Man City rhythm. Chloe Kelly will miss a penalty. Premonition out. All right. Thanks so much for listening. You can follow us at Relatively Foot, at Relatively Football on Instagram, Relatively Foot on Twitter. Email us, especially you Canadians. I want to hear about that rivalry with the United States. RelativelyFootball@gmail.com. Be safe, be kind, and we'll see you soon. Nice to see you, Flo.
Nice to see you as always, mate.
Have a good night. Cheers. Bye-bye.